This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a Deacon and Trustees Seminar held on August 4, 2026 in Goshen, Indiana.
Good afternoon, everybody. I want to take the time and thank you for being here. Take the time to off to come. So yeah, I have these butterflies in my stomach all week. I started a new job Monday morning, and now this when I walked in here this afternoon, those butterflies started flying around. So. If my voice is shaky, just bear with me, but I'll do the best I can. So some of the topics, this is the first time I use this, so bear with me again. Fraud aware intro, the widow that got scammed, the phone scams, fraudsters and their tactics, and investment, financial opportunity, and tax evasion. And check fraud. So first of all, who is fraud aware? The vision grew out of committees in Holmes County, Ohio. An FBI made a comment that they are watching 7 illegal money pools, and that's sort of where this committee grew out. They started one in Pennsylvania and then reached out to northern Indiana. And there's older Amish represented, older Mennonite Whistlers, and the conservative Mennonite conference. And then in 2025, Ohio formed a committee, and then just this year, Arthur, Illinois started. The goal is to reach every Anabaptist community in northern Indiana or North America, United States, to get the word out. We distribute literature and trade shows and wherever we can go. So, what does fraud aware, what we value? Community well-being, protecting our communities from harm of fraud, stewardship, encouraging responsible management of finances, collaboration, inviting feedback, and working together to reduce fraud, education and awareness, informing people about the risks and methods of fraud, trust and integrity, addressing how fraud undermines trust and goodwill within communities, identification and prevention, and then conservative Anabaptist principles. What fraud aware is not? A group of investment advisors, a CPA accounting firm or tax advisor, a legal counsel, an investment organization, an authority, an ambulance. We do not step in to take control, clean up, or lead through an unfortunate situation. We just make recommendations. A breach of trust, and we're not a medical advisory group. There's a lot of medical scams going on right now. So what are some biblical definitions of fraud? Proverbs 12:22, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that truly deal truly are his delight. Proverbs 11:1, a false balance is an abomination unto the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Proverbs 20:17, this one was a new one to me. Bread of deceit is sweet to a man, but after his mouth shall be filled with gravel. Proverbs 21:6, the getting of treasure by a lying tongue is a vanity tossed to and fro of them that seek death. And this is a saying I came across forgiving these fraudsters and scammers. To forgive one is to set a prisoner free and to realize that prisoner was you. What is the definition of fraud? Wrongful or criminal deception intended to result in financial or personal gain. What's the definition of a scam? A dishonest scheme to gain money or possessions from someone to make a quick profit. So I added ripoff in here too. A fraud or swindler, especially something that is grossly overpriced. Something that is not worth what you paid for it. And then there's some alternate words for fraud and scam. Swindle, hoax, con, trick, hustle, deceit, diddle, bunko, sham, racket, ruse, grift, blackmail, and extortion. So, speaking of ripoff, about 13 years ago, we bought a new house and moved into it, and from day one, my wife didn't like the windows, and she was always asking me about new windows, and I just pushed it off. So about 2 years ago, she was at the MEC in a home show, and she put her name in a box to have a consultation with a window guy. So they came out to her house, and they had good windows, no doubt about it. And we sat down, we talked. He was there about an hour. And I told him we want to think about it, and I got that look from my wife. You guys all know what I'm talking about. And the salesman said that he'd like to close this tonight. And then part of the deal was if we provide six names, references, you'll throw $3,000 off the price. So we agreed, and it was 0% finance. So I'll get him here, I thought. I'm going to pay him cash, see if he comes down, but he didn't budge. So we went ahead and ordered the windows, and 2 weeks later, they came and replaced the windows. I had no complaints. The windows were super. And then in the meantime, one of the references was my oldest brother, and him being wiser and older than I am, said he wants to think about it. So he asked my brother-in-law, and he's has a construction crew, and the brother-in-law said, absolutely don't do it, because he's changed too many windows that weren't installed right. So the brother-in-law leaves us a message, absolutely don't go for those windows. It's a scam. The windows were already all installed. So how am I going to explain this to him? But yeah, we had a good talk, and he did look at the windows and admitted they're good windows, but they were way overpriced. He said he could have put them in for half the price. So I guess that's one definition of a ripoff. So the widow that got scammed is a story of a widow that was held hostage on the phone. There is a book out on it that we pass out a lot of these. What can we do to prevent it? As you will see on the bottom of all the sections here, there's a stop, disconnect, and reconsider. Who are these scammers? We've heard different versions of it. Some of them are human trafficking victims that are forced to do this. I've heard a story from a young Mennonite kid that was, I'm thinking it was Cambodia, doing mission work, and they were driving through the countryside and this huge warehouse, and some of the locals said it's a big scam center. They're lured in there with huge promise of huge wages. And once they're working there, they threaten them with, they have like pictures of their families, where they live. If you leave, we're going to harm your family. So they keep working for a low wage, not what they're promised. And the government knows about it, but they just tolerate it. So once in a while, they have a what they call a breakout, where 100 of these scammers bunch together and they just break out and go. So some of these are forced to do this, and I know there's professionals out there that are doing this for a living that are not forced to do it. So I've always referred to them as school bullies. Some of you might have read Calvin and Hobbes when you were younger, comic book. Mo came up to Calvin and said, "Give me a quarter, Twinkie." And he got what he wanted, but yeah, that's just a comic book. So most successful thieves may not carry guns, hide their faces behind ski masks, or break into your house. They just might steal your money while you're sitting on an easy chair sipping lemonade. There it says that in 2023, there's over 10 billion lost to scams. That's 19,000 a minute. This does not include unreported losses. And Norm just told me the first 6 months of 2026, they reported 1.8 billion lost to scams. Thousands of scammers make a living by stealing from people like you. Will you be their next victim? I had a neighbor that, talking about phone scams, never trust your caller ID. If somebody calls you and tells you they're their bank, hang up and call your bank, because on the way over here, one of the guys was telling about a guy that got a call from his bank. The caller ID had the bank number on it. So he gave him information, and he was thinking about this over the weekend. I'm not sure what all he shared with the scammers, but Monday morning he went to the bank and his bank account was wiped out. Some banks give your money back, but some don't. It depends. So I had a neighbor that got a call from NIPSCO. He said they're going to shut off his gas if he doesn't pay his bills. And they directed him to go to a CVS and buy a... It's not a gift card, it's not cryptocurrency, I'm not sure what it was anymore, but it was a form of, like, gift card type of payment. So the first time he went in, he bought a card for $600, called... and they took the money. So they call him again a couple days later, and he went back to CVS to buy another card because he was panicking. He had a business. He didn't want his gas shut off. And the clerk was trained to watch for this, so she asked him what's going on, and then he told her, and she told him that's a scam. And that had the NIPSCO caller ID on as well. Scammers use professional-sounding terms to gain your trust, like posing as an FBI or IRS agent or your banker. These are the scammers' weapons here. Scammers talk fast to confuse you. Scammers use fear to override your common sense, threaten you with arrest, or, example, shutting off your gas. Scammers make you distrust people you should trust. Create a sense of urgency to confuse your thinking. And then they shame you for asking valid questions. They use flattery to trap you, pressure you not to tell others, require you to keep the phone connected. They bait their hooks with free worms. They lure victims with a prize or a threat, pretend to be from a trusted organization, again, like FBI, police, IRS, or NIPSCO. They often require payment with an untraceable payment type like gift cards or cryptocurrency. This should be a huge red flag. I worked with a young guy that bought a trailer off of Craigslist, and it was very low priced, and they wanted gift cards for payment. This was 5-6 years ago before you heard a whole lot about this. So he gave him the gift cards, or the number over the phone, or through email, whatever it was. And then he called them and said they need more money to get this thing across the state line. They were going to deliver it. And that's when the red flags went up. And he tried to stop the gift cards, and they were cashed in already. Yeah, it's so easy to fall for that stuff. They pressure victims to act immediately. Pressure victims to promise confidentiality. They often manipulate people into shading the truth. Next are the standard responses. If a bank teller asks a question, tell them what you are doing. They are trained to detect fraud, like the CVS clerk. Listen to advice from people you know and trust. Gift cards are for gifts, not paying bills. And number four is just hang up the phone. Telling only the truth will save you from many scams. So the next section is examples of financial opportunity and tax evasion. I did a little research on this tax evasion because I was sort of in the dark on it. Common examples of tax fraud: underreporting income, failing to file tax returns, intentionally not filing a return to avoid paying taxes can lead to fraud charges, falsifying deductions or credits. Notable cases of tax fraud: we all heard of Bernie Madoff, known for orchestrating one of the largest Ponzi schemes in history. Madoff also committed tax fraud by failing to report income and claiming false deductions. He was sentenced to 150 years in prison. And Al Capone, famous gangster in Chicago, Illinois, responsible for dozens of deaths. But you know what they got him on? Tax fraud. He was only sentenced to 11 years in prison. Former CEO Dennis Kozlowski was found guilty of tax fraud for using company funds for personal expenses. Sound familiar? It does to me, because I've done it. Next, illegal money pools. I wish I'd know more about this, but this is what started all this, the Fraud Aware group that made it get started. Attorney feedback: illegal loan pools will continue unless you educate your people, and the message has to come within. A lot of these illegal loan pools, I think, start out as innocent. Guy comes up with a bright idea, and he's going to get his friends together and get them to invest a bunch of money, and he's going to invest it in real estate, and real estate market crashes. And then a lot of times they send out false documents to the investors so they don't panic. Very illegal. In the past 20 years, over $300 million has been lost. That's among the Anabaptist people, from illegal loan pools. Why would we invest in them? An illegal investment pool refers to a group of people that, a group or vehicle that collects investor funds without proper registration, licensing, or compliance with security laws. You have to be registered to do that. In the U.S., such pools are generally prohibited because they operate outside of the regulatory framework that protects investors. What makes a pool illegal? Raise money from the public without SEC registration, that's Security Exchange Commission. Fails to register as required under the Investment Advisors Act or Security Act. Misrepresents fund performances or risks, like sending out false statements. Diverts investor funds for personal use. Fails to issue required tax or reporting documents. Example of an illegal pool case. June 2026, the SEC charged John Sterling Myers and his companies with running an illegal, premier, and exclusive investment pool from 2022 to 2025. The pool raised about $4 million from 28 investors. They misappropriated over $3.6 million of investor funds, falsified account statements, failed to issue the required tax forms, and they diverted assets to personal accounts. Why are these pools dangerous? No regulatory oversight means no mandated disclosures or compliance checks. Misuse of funds is common as seen in the Sterling Capital case. Lack of transparency, potential for fraud. Why would we invest in something like this? Affinity fraud factor. I looked up affinity, a spontaneous or natural liking or sympathy for someone or something because we trust them. You might go to our church, might be our cousin, or you name it. They speak our language, they are one of us. Attracted to higher than average interest rates. It's like the Richie said about the ones that want to get rich. They're desperate and careless. It's easy to invest in. Simply write a check with a verbal agreement. No documentation. How do we know if it's legal? How can we identify higher risk, lower risks? Red flags, green flags. Before I forget it, there's literature out there on phone scams in the lobby and about investment fraud. It's free to take. There's a phone scam booklet that's just new. Red flags, not legal, not registered with the SEC. No financial statements. One person operator. There's another thing. And above market rates. The green flags, it's legal, audited financial statements, they have an oversight board, more than one person, and average market rates. And we've all heard about the duck. If it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it probably is a duck. And then the fraud in parentheses. Verify it's a trustee organization, full disclosure, oversight, and they're reputable. There is safety in counsel, approachable, teachable, and humble. All investments have risk. We want to encourage the best practice. So at the beginning, I had said something about we're not police or whatever, we just make suggestions, but there was this ad in the PCBE, 10% interest. They're looking for investors, so I called them. And then I started asking questions about if he's registered with the SEC. No, but I'm working on it. About the second question he asked me, "Kannst du Deutsch?" I said, "Yes, I can speak Dutch." Anyway, I asked him all these questions, and every question was, "No, but I'm working on it." And then at the end, he asked me, "Will you help us?" I told him I'm with Fraud Aware. And probably shouldn't have done that because we're not policemen, but it sort of irritated me a little bit that this guy's advertising for high interest. So needless to say, the ad disappeared a couple weeks later. So don't put all your eggs in one basket. The investment sheep test. If you would feel sheepish discussing investment with your fellow church members, you should probably avoid it. Next subject is check fraud. After I committed to doing this topic, it actually happened to me, so I figured I'd put this at the end. So this is an actual copy of a fraudulent check. I had a call from my bank's fraud department that somebody cashed a check for $8,800, and I'm supposed to call him right away. So I called him three times and he never answered. So I called him the next day, he still didn't answer. Finally, at the end of the second day, I got a hold of somebody. And he said, "You need to come to the bank right away." So this is an actual photocopy of the check for my fertilizer business. And somebody must have took a picture of this, of an actual check, and sold it on the black market. That's all I can figure out. With AI, they can do anything. So the first check was $8,800. That went through. And the second check was $6,800, $2,000 less, and that went through. So we were sitting in the bank closing our account, and I wasn't sure which checks hadn't cleared yet, and I asked him to see if he could print off whatever check register, and he did, and there was another attempt in there, and it bounced, and I said, "There's another check here that they tried to cash, and it didn't go through," and the banker couldn't believe it. So I came home, and there was a call from a bank out of state, and they asked me if I wrote a check for $5,600. That was the fourth attempt. But by that time, the account was closed already. I just figured I had a check stolen and somebody took that information, but I never had a check missing in the mail. So in talking to my banker, he said, "We have evidence in the area that checks are being stolen from the mailboxes." And in Indianapolis, there was a postmaster that got arrested. He was a ringleader of a check fraud ring. That was a postmaster. I'm not here to scare anybody, but this is for real. I mean, it's happening. Check fraud prevention. Check fraud is increasing despite the rise of digital payments. Paper check scams remain one of the most commonly reported financial crimes, with losses having surged in recent years. Individuals who mail checks face greater exposure to theft and fraud. Fraudsters use methods like check washing to redirect funds. Using a pigment-based non-greasable gel pen instead of a ballpoint pen can help deter check tampering. Dropping checks in a secure USPS collection box or inside a post office lowers the risk of theft compared to leaving them in unsecured mailboxes. So one thing they did really recommend is, if you do not want to take it to the post office, I go by there every day, so we started mailing our checks and just drop them off. Do not put them out the night before or early in the morning. So I'm going to open up for questions. If I don't have an answer, maybe Norman can help me. But the gentleman at the end of the table here, green shirt, told me that if anybody, I didn't have an answer for him. What happened, he built sheds, and then somebody bought a shed with a stolen credit card. Credit card was still active. Account wasn't closed. So he paid it with the stolen credit card information, and then, was it 3 months later, the actual cardholder disputed the charge, and he was out of his money. So you cannot check with the bank to see if the card's good, because it still is. It's just in somebody else's hand. So if anybody has any advice for him, I guess, yeah, speak up. So, okay, do we have any questions? Yes. Check washing is when they check, what's the term check washing was a question. Somehow they have a solution where they can wash the amount off and rewrite it in. And with a gel pen, you cannot do that. I don't know how they do it without smearing it all over, but they do it. Any other questions? Okay, I guess I'm just going to close with, like I said, I'm not here to scare anybody, but trust in the Lord in all thy heart and lean not into thy own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy path. Thank you.